Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today. Every year, millions of Americans are blindsided by surprise medical bills and crushing debt, not because they did anything wrong, but because the system is designed to be confusing. In this episode of Care Talk, Patricia Kilmar at PIRG, the Public Interest Research Group, explains your rights under the No Surprises Act, how surprise medical billing has changed, and what you can do about it. Welcome to Care Talk Live, a weekly American healthcare policy show and podcast where we explain how healthcare works or doesn't work and get you answers. I'm Laura Packard, cancer survivor and healthcare advocate here to help you. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get future Care Talk shows. Today, we're talking about surprise medical billing and what to do about it. So welcome to Patricia Kilmar, the Senior Director of Healthcare Campaigns at PIRG. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Happy to be here.
So let's start with, what is a surprise medical bill?
Well, many bills that people receive are very surprising, but actually there's a technical word for No Surprises Act and surprise billing, and that is an out-of-network bill. So we all know the best way to save some money when you are seeking care is to make sure that you seek care from a doctor or go and use a hospital or urgent care center that is part of your insurance network. And that insurance network gives you an advantage financially because your insurer has negotiated how much they're going to pay that doctor or that hospital for your care. And then to incent you to go there, you will pay a in-network lower amount copay or co-insurance because of that negotiated fee. Surprise billing comes in when you go to an out-of-network provider that you didn't realize was out-of-network. And because they don't have a negotiated payment with your insurance company, they can charge you and your insurer anything that they want. The insurers usually have some kind of payment that they pay normally for those out-of-network providers and hospitals, but it usually isn't the whole bill. And so then there's a remaining balance, and that will be that individual who used that service's responsibility. That's where the big surprise comes in, and you are obligated to pay that out-of-network remaining balance, the surprise bill.
Okay, and so this used to be a really big problem. And what happened was Congress actually did something. They passed the No Surprises Act that was supposed to fix the problem. So can you tell us what that law is and how it works?
So the most common areas where people were experiencing these surprise bills were in situations where they would go to an in-network hospital. And so they did a good job. They picked the in-network hospital. They picked the in-network surgeon. But unbeknownst to them, the anesthesiologist was not in-network. Or the labs and the MRI that you needed before the surgery, all of those were not in network. And so people were being shocked, right? Like, wait, I did the right thing. I did everything right. And here I am getting all of these out-of-network bills and being charged thousands of dollars. So the No Surprises Act said, in those situations where the patient has done everything correctly, they've chosen the right kinds of providers in network, we're going to protect you from any out-of-network charges. And we're going to make sure that all you pay is your normal in-network services and prices, the amount that you would have to pay, that copay, that coinsurance. So the most common areas where you're protected under the No Surprises Act is when you've chosen your in-network hospital, all of the people who are touching you in that environment, and you've chosen that in-network surgeon, all the other ancillary services, they call it, the anesthesiologist, the radiologist, all the labs, all of that, you only pay that in-network amount. And then the other areas where it exists is emergency rooms, right? We're generally not picking where that ambulance takes us, or if we're taking ourselves, we're going to the closest emergency room. It may or may not be in-network. But the No Surprises Act also protects you in those situations. Go to the closest emergency room and you will only pay in-network prices. And then the final area that the No Surprises Act helps out is with air ambulances. These are the helicopters that or the planes that are taking you in emergency situations and transporting you. So you have protections. There would be only an in-network copay for that. And you wouldn't pay those out-of-network balance bills, which were hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that was left out of the No Surprises Act was ground ambulances. So air ambulances are covered, but ground ambulances, the more common thing people think of when they think about ambulances, that's not part of this, right?
Right. Congress was working hard to get some kind of protections for patients. And ground ambulances are very locally regulated and very locally provided. So it seemed to Congress, I guess, that it was just too much to take on in this effort. So they created in the No Surprises Act a task force, basically, to report back to Congress, how should we solve the situation of these balance bills, these surprise bills from ground ambulances in every community? And let's hear what those recommendations are. In the meantime, though, we have about 26 states that have some level of state protection for ground ambulances. So they, again, in those states where there is a law, you might be protected from out-of-network balance bills from ground ambulances.
Okay, but that's still something that needs to be fixed on the federal level.
Absolutely.
So now that this law is in place and has been in place for a few years now, we have a better sense of how it's working. So on the one hand, it's good news in that patients no longer have to deal with these surprise medical bills, but the bill still exists and somebody still needs to pay it. So how is that working out?
Right. So we have all of these out-of-network providers who are still wanting more than an in-network rate. And so they no longer can come after the patient. So that's out of the situation. So there was an arbitration system set up. So now, if a provider is out of network and they aren't happy with the payment that the insurance company has given them, they can file a dispute with an independent dispute resolution system with an arbitrator. They say, I really don't like what the insurance company has given me, pay me more, and they put in an amount of what they want to be paid for their services. The insurer then is allowed to look at their in-network rates, and they often offer what has been paid at other providers who they have a negotiated rate with. And so those are the two offers that are on the plate, and the arbitrator has to pick one or the other. The problem is the arbitrators, based on the data that we've seen over the last 4 years, the arbitrators are almost 80 to 90% of the time picking the provider. The provider is winning. And not only is the provider winning, but they're winning way over what the market rate would be for an in-network provider for those services. They're asking 4 times, 5 times what an in-network provider would ask for that service. And they're winning those rates. So it's costing a lot of money for our insurance companies. And we all know what happens when our insurance companies ask for more, have to pay more money. They come back to us in premiums, higher premiums.
Mm-hmm. And also, I wonder if the fact that so many providers are making so much money off of these incentivizes more providers to not be in network, because you can make much more money if you're not in network and you're charging these huge surprise bills and actually getting them paid.
Yes, that's a huge problem. The original thought behind the No Surprises Act is if we had a system where these arbitrations would come out with like a kind of market rate for what an out-of-network provider would get paid through these arbitration disputes, that it would create an incentive. Well, I don't want to go through all this arbitration. Let me just go in network. Let me work with that insurer and come in network and be part of the networked system. It's not working that way. What providers are seeing is, wow, it's worth it to roll the dice. It's worth it to stay out of network. And let me see if I can go to arbitration and ask for a lot more money. And 80% of the time, I'm going to get it.
So it's hard to feel sorry for the insurance companies. But as you pointed out, in the end, we all pay more because of this. So what can or should Congress and us be doing about this?
Yeah, so think about it. And I appreciate, you know, we often get really angry at our insurers, but we should think about like who these types of providers are and why it's not like a normal market system, right? It's not a normal relationship. When you have patients always going to the hospital for certain types of surgeries and care, right? There's always going to be an anesthesiologist. There's always going to be a radiologist in that hospital. They have a natural group of patients who are coming to them. So they don't really benefit from being in network. They're just going to naturally get every patient that comes through that hospital as a patient of theirs. So when insurers are going to a radiologist or an anesthesiologist, they don't have any leverage, right? This is the hospital. This is the in-network hospital. And the radiologist can just say, I don't need your network. I'm going to get the patients anyway. I'm going to get to bill. So we do need to set up a better arbitration system. We have a few different ideas. Originally, the consumers who were involved in the No Surprises Act, we didn't even want to have arbitration. We just thought, let's just give all of those out-of-network providers a percent of Medicare, right? Medicare sets its rates based on cost. So maybe Medicare is too low. We can give them 200% of Medicare rates or 250%. Then there's no back and forth. We know what the Medicare rates are. The out-of-network provider gets paid. If they don't like it, they can negotiate and come in network and try to get a better rate. But we just take all of that extra administrative burden out of the system. That would be the cheapest and easiest and quickest way to solve this problem. We're not sure Congress is ready to do that yet. So even just making arbitrators really have to prove why they're going for an award that is 500% of the in-network rate, that would be a start.
And why do you think, why hasn't Congress done something about this yet? Perhaps because there's a lot of things on Congress's plate. And how much money do you think this could save if Congress did do something?
Yes. So there's a lot of figures out there. It's in the billions of dollars if we figured this out, because every year this is happening, right? There's no changing. If anything, we'll be seeing more and more providers use this. It's taken a few years to get this data and to get it in a form that really shows the problem. So I feel like the time is right now. We have several years of data. We expected to have a little, you know, volatility in an initial, you know, few years of a new piece of legislation. That always happens. So now that it's 4 or 5 years out and we've seen that, you know, it's just consistently 80% of the time providers are winning very high awards, it's time to get serious about fixing it. And there's a good group of people. A lot of different people are interested in doing that, right? We're all looking for ways to lower healthcare costs. So I think this might be the year where we can say we've tried it. It's not working great. It's helping consumers. So we don't want to change that. But let's figure it out on the back end and let's get some of that cost containment we were hoping to get when we originally passed the law.
Absolutely. And finally, if somebody has been hit with a surprise medical bill that they think should be covered by the No Surprises Act, what should somebody do?
So there's a really great toolkit on the federal government website. It's called CMS Medical Bill Rights, and it's at the cms.gov website. You can just type CMS Medical Bill Rights. You'll get to the page. And you can plug in, it's kind of an action, questions, answers. I have insurance, I got this kind of a bill. And it helps figure out whether or not you have a surprise bill that you can then dispute. So the first and most important thing anyone should do when they get a bill that they don't understand is they should call their insurer and call their provider and make sure they get an itemized bill, understand what each of the charges are, and then work with their insurance company to understand why they didn't pay it or why they didn't pay most of it. Don't pay that bill until you really understand what you're being asked to pay.
Thank you, Patricia. That is good advice for everybody listening at home. Just a reminder that we have free or low-cost healthcare resources available on our website at healthcarevoices.org/caretalk, so check that out. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. And now our experts will answer your health insurance. So also, welcome to Louise Norris, Health Insurance and Healthcare Reform Analyst at healthinsurance.org, and Rachel Madley, the Executive Director of Center for Health and Democracy. So let's start with Louise with new and breaking news on healthcare that people should know about.
Sure. So a couple of different things I wanted to talk about. First of all, we are hearing that congressional Republicans are once again considering the possibility of allocating funding for cost sharing reductions as a means of saving money in order to fund the ongoing war in Iran. So this is an issue that came up last year. This was debated last year as a potential cost savings for the federal government. And I just want to make sure, I don't know, whether this is likely to pass, what the long-term future of this is, but I want to make sure consumers understand what's being talked about here. Because what you'll commonly see is lawmakers saying, oh, if we fund cost-sharing reductions, it'll lower prices by 11% premiums. And that is very much misinformation. So what they're actually talking about is cost-sharing reductions, which are part of the Affordable Care Act. Under the Affordable Care Act, if your household income is up to 250% of the poverty level and you pick a silver plan in the marketplace, you get lower out-of-pocket costs than a normal silver plan. You get lower deductible, lower copays, lower total out-of-pocket costs. This is a pretty significant benefit for marketplace enrollees who are on the lower end of the income spectrum. But back in 2017, the first Trump administration cut off federal funding for these cost-sharing reductions. And as a result, what the insurance companies did is boosted up they basically raised the premiums on silver plans to account for this cost, because they still have to provide this benefit to enrollees. What raising premiums on silver plans does is it increases everybody's premium subsidies, which is a different type of subsidy. The cost sharing reductions are one subsidy, premium subsidies are a different subsidy. If they were to now start allocating funding for cost sharing reductions, it would lower those silver plan premiums. But the only people who would benefit from that are the people who earn more, who don't get a premium subsidy, meaning they earn more than 400% of the poverty level, and they buy a silver plan. This year, that's about 170,000 people total out of 23 million marketplace enrollees. What it would do, though, it would harm about 5 million marketplace enrollees who do get a subsidy. They would all see their subsidy amount drop. So this is a very bad idea. The reason it would save the government money, they're saying it would save $30 billion. The reason it would save that money is because everybody's premium subsidies would go down. So this is, if you feel like contacting your lawmaker, if you're getting marketplace subsidies, you definitely do not want the government to fund cost sharing reductions. And I know that sounds a little counterintuitive because people think, oh, it's good to have federal funding for this benefit that people get in the marketplace, but people are already getting that benefit. Nothing would change about that. It would just make your premiums go up if they do that. So that's one thing people should be aware of. And then the other thing is, on Friday, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services put out a big, huge amount of data in terms of open enrollment that finished in January. So now we do have more numbers that we hadn't had up until now. Total enrollment dropped about 5%. It was down about 1.2 million people. Not at all surprising. This is because Congress did not extend the subsidy enhancements that expired at the end of 2025. So unfortunately, net premiums increased significantly. If we look at just the net premiums that people are paying, the average increased about 58% for 2026. Now, they originally last fall were projecting more than 100% increase. Just to clarify, the reason it's only 58% is because a lot of people downgraded their coverage. So that when we were looking last fall and it was projecting more than a doubling of average premiums, that would have been if everybody kept the coverage they had last year. Unfortunately, that was not the case. This year, about 40% of people picked a bronze plan, up from about 30% last year. And silver plans went from about 56% of enrollees last year down to about 43% of enrollees this year. So people downgraded their coverage in an effort to hang on to their coverage. But even with all those downgrades, premiums, average premiums that people pay went up 58%. So
not great.
Not great.
So our next question is from Cookie Cakes on Reddit, who mentioned that they verified with their insurance that the hospital and CPT codes were in network and would be covered for service. But then this person got billed over $4,000 because the service actually was out of network. The testing was out of state and they wanted to verify so they had coverage. They talked to the insurance rep, said yes, and it would be covered 100%. But they got a bill from the hospital for over $1,000, and they just got another $3,000 bill from the company that did the biopsies. Patricia, can you tell us maybe what's going on and what they can do about it? Is this a surprise bill?
Yes. So that's a tough question to answer just from what you've read. It's really important to understand the difference between the surprise bills that are out of network. So I think the question was about that they had confirmed that the bill amount was from an out-of-network provider. So sometimes the No Surprises Act really relates to hospital care. So I'm not clear whether this was a hospital who owned some kind of imaging center or some other like blood lab work or something like that. So if it was a lab or an imaging center and the person wasn't an inpatient, this might be a situation where you went to your regular, doctor for a checkup. It was an in-network doctor, but unfortunately they sent you out or sent out your blood work to an out-of-network provider. That happens. So whenever you get your blood taken or you're sent, downstairs to get your MRI from your regular doctor and you're not an inpatient, you should make sure that wherever you're being sent, even if that blood draw is in the same office area, it could be being run by an out-of-network company. So make sure you're asking before they draw your blood, what lab is this? Can you double check that that's my in-network lab or, what imaging services company is running this imaging machine? and make sure you double check it. So that's the first thing. The other thing I want to flag, though, is we're seeing a lot more people get these crazy facility fees. And facility fees used to only be charged by hospitals when you were an inpatient. But as hospitals buy more and more provider practices, they are taking over the billing of our regular OBGYNs, our oncologists, our allergists. And now you'll get your regular OBGYN bill or oncology bill, and the hospital will send a facility fee bill to you directly, despite the fact that you never stepped into the hospital. So this might be a situation where it's a facility fee that's being sent by the hospital for outpatient care. It's a little hard to tell, but those unfortunately are legal in most states, and we're really trying to fight that. No one should be paying hospital fees for outpatient care.
Absolutely. And so in this case, need more information to really figure out what's going on, but they can always, you know, dispute a bill if they have questions, or ask for an itemized bill as a place to start.
Yep. Ask for an itemized bill always, because you want to understand, what is this $1,000? What is this $3,000? What are you charging me for? Is this a doctor bill? Is this a hospital bill? Is it a fee? So that you have a basis to understand. And remember that less than 1% of people actually try to appeal a claim denial. So is this something where your claim was denied by your insurance company? That's another reason maybe that they're seeing that bill. You want to always do that. You always want to appeal any claim denials from your insurance company if you feel like they should have covered that. It should have been there. The other thing that sometimes people forget, especially in these first few months of a new year, when your health insurance might be a new health insurance and the start of the year is January 1 for you, you have to pay your deductible up front. All of these charges that are coming through might still be part of your deductible. If you have a deductible of $8,000, $9,000, you're going to be paying a lot of your initial bills before you hit your amount.
Indeed. Thank you, Patricia.
You're welcome.
Our next question is about Medicare Advantage open enrollment, which is almost over. It ends Tuesday, March 31st. Rachel, what do people need to know and do in the final hours before Medicare Advantage open enrollment ends?
Great question. And the first thing to know is that if you are happy with your coverage, you don't need to do anything. However, if you are in a Medicare Advantage plan, you can switch to another Medicare Advantage plan, or you can drop your Medicare Advantage plan and return to original Medicare. Now, there's things you need to keep in mind if you're doing both of those. So if you want to switch between Medicare Advantage plans, make sure that you're aware that Medicare Advantage plans have much narrower networks than the traditional Medicare program, which allows you to see any doctor that accepts the Medicare rate. Medicare Advantage plans also require a lot of prior authorizations before you can get the care that you need. So if you're switching between one plan to another, there's a chance that your provider, even if you've been seeing them for 5-10 years, might not be a network with that new plan. So always check the new plan's networks and prior authorization requirements. If you're switching from Medicare Advantage to traditional Medicare, you have to keep in mind that you will need to purchase a separate Part D drug plan to cover your prescription drugs. And there is no out-of-pocket cap in traditional Medicare. And that means that often folks want to purchase a supplemental plan called a Medigap plan, which will help to cover the coinsurance from the traditional Medicare program, which again, doesn't have a cap on it. So you could be on the hook for a very high amount of money if you have a chronic illness or an accident. Now, you need to remember, if you're switching from a Medicare Advantage plan to traditional Medicare, in many, many states, they actually allow Medigap plans to do what's called medical underwriting, meaning that they can ask questions about your health status and deny you coverage or increase your premiums because of pre-existing conditions. So it is possible to make moves during Medicare Advantage enrollment, but you always want to be very cautious when you do so. even if you're staying within Medicare Advantage, just switching plans, and especially if you're moving into traditional Medicare, because it doesn't have that out-of-pocket cap. And of course, adding an out-of-pocket cap to traditional Medicare, if that's something Congress would do, it would simplify the process for a lot of people because there wouldn't be those concerns in terms of switching between Medicare Advantage and traditional Medicare.
Going on the subject of Congress looking at healthcare cuts to pay for the war in Iran, which we're not going to cover of the details of the war in Iran, but just know that Congress is looking for places to cut right now. As Patricia mentioned, surprise medical bills, the way the process is playing out is that we're overpaying billions on some of these arbitration awards to providers. It's also true that we're overpaying billions to Medicare Advantage companies, right? That the research has shown that they're being overpaid.
That's correct. The overpayment level for 2026 is predicted to be over $70 billion with a B. And if you look at what that money could do, if we reinvested it into the Medicare program, the traditional Medicare program, you could do things like adding an out-of-pocket cap, adding dental, vision, and hearing benefits. As we've been talking about, ACA premiums have gone up. We could reinvest it and help people afford healthcare rather than sending those overpayments to Medicare Advantage insurance companies.
Absolutely. So we should not be cutting our healthcare right now. But if people in elected office are looking at cuts, there are places to cut that don't damage the care that patients receive. So thank you, everybody, for joining us today to learn more about how healthcare works or doesn't work in America and surprise medical billing. Be sure to check out more free or low-cost healthcare resources on our website at healthcarevoices.org/caretalk. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. Join us next week for more. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Laura Packard, and this is Care Talk.
It's no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line, and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun, because you deserve the truth.